friends, I would like to begin by explaining what we are all doing here, which is, of course, one of the great mysteries of life. But this is not a conference per se, this is a Sufi gathering. This is a coming together of Sufis of many different orders. And it has a lot to do with presence. It has a lot to do with being here. Somehow in our age of electronic communication, of cell phones, of emails, we have a little bit overlooked the importance of presence, of what happens when people are together. And this is very much one of the cornerstones of Sufism, that when our people are together for his sake, and please, throughout this weekend, remember, we are not here for ourselves. You are not here to get anything. We are here for the sake of our beloved. I remember a long time ago, somebody I knew was asked in a dream, how do you define God? And he said in response, God is what we as Sufis love. I always thought that was a wonderful description of the beloved. God is what we as Sufis love. We are here for the sake of he, it, whom we love, to whom our hearts belonged. And we are together for his sake. This has a deep esoteric meaning. When people are together for the sake of love, for the sake of that which is real, then that which is real can incarnate, can come into being, can come into presence. That is when the human and the divine come together, and then something else can take place, something else can be born, and we are here to give birth to something, to allow something to be born, to allow ourselves to be used. This is the offering of ourselves. There is a wonderful ancient Sufi prayer. I offer to thee the only thing I have, my capacity of being filled by thee. We are here together at a certain time in a certain place so something can come into being. So this wonderful cross-fertilization of different Sufi paths can begin to take place, which is so important for the future. It is like different threads of love. You see, each Sufi path, each Sufi tradition is a different thread of love, is a different energy that comes from the beloved into manifestation, from the inner into the outer. And one is attracted to a particular path, whether it is a Chisti path or a Naqshbandi path, Jirahi path, whatever path you are attracted to, because your soul is in resonance with that note of love, that particular stream of love, because that is what you need, your soul needs to go home to make this great journey back to the source, back to the beloved. This is to realize within your own heart the mystery of oneness, which has always been the treasure of the Sufis. I am he whom I love, he whom I love is me. This is why for ages Sufis have been known as the people of the secret, because they carried this secret for humanity, this secret of oneness, of the oneness of lover and beloved, because for us, God is our beloved. We live the passion of the passion of the soul being incarnated into every moment of every day. This has, of course, to do with the deep meaning of remembrance, which is one of the cornerstones of Sufism, to remember our beloved with every breath we take, and to live it, not in some abstract sense, not in some idealized sense, but in the blood, in the passion, in the each moment of each day, in the mundanity of our everyday life, and to celebrate it. Sufis are those who celebrate his love for us. This tremendous mystery of incarnation. I am he whom I love, he whom I love is me. The secret that is molded into the heart, that is given to humanity, and yet kept secret for millennia. In fact, great Sufis like Al-Hallaj were crucified for revealing this secret. The secret of mystical oneness that is at the core of the path. And when all the different paths that we here represent, all these different threads of love, are woven together in remembrance of our beloved, then it creates a container of love and devotion. And into that container, something can be given. In that container, something can be born. Something can come into being, in which our own individuality, the uniqueness of our own path, remains the same, and yet there is also a oneness woven into it in which everything is included, in which all aspects of creation are woven into, as they are woven with the names of God, into our hearts, but forgotten, because our culture has been busy with so many other things. We have forgotten how the names of God are woven into creation. And that needs to be awoken. That needs to be made conscious, to be shared, to be given back to humanity, the secret that belongs to humanity. And we are in service. Sufis are known as slaves of the one and servants of the many. We are his slaves. We belong to him. Since before the beginning of time, we belong to him. We are stamped with his name in our heart. That is why it is said, Sufis are not made, they are born. You come into being with that stamp into the heart. And then your own soul's individual journey helps you to live it. But something needs to be shared, something needs to be given back to humanity, something needs to come alive. Not for us, because we have been given it, we know it. We know the names of God that are written in creation. We have tasted, however much in the dim recesses of our consciousness, the mystery of divine oneness. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be called to the path. We wouldn't be called to live our own longing. Because what is longing? It is the memory of oneness. But for a long time, this has been kept in closed esoteric groups, secretly hidden, shared only to initiates. And that time is over because humanity is starving for the names of God, for the recognition of divine oneness. And it has forgotten that it even exists. And we are in service to humanity. We come into this world in service to God. And so we are here together for a few days as Sufis from our different walks of life, different lovers of God, for his sake, not for ours. If you come here for your own sake, the door will be closed. If you come here to get something, you will go home empty-handed. But if you come here to be attentive to love, then something can take place. Something that needs each of us in our own individual nature, in our own uniqueness, in our own core of our being, and also together. This is part of the ancient mystery of Sufism. If you read the stories of the Sufis in the 10th, 12th centuries, how they would go travel from village to village, from town to town, and visit all the different sheikhs, and be welcomed, and share amongst each other the mystery of divine love. And be together for his sake. And all were welcome, because that is part, again, of the Sufi tradition. To welcome the wayfarer. to welcome the traveler. And to be attentive to love. It sounds so simple and it is such a deep mystery. We all want to do something. So we forget what is simple, what is needed. To be attentive to love, what does that mean? It is to be attentive to how His love comes into the world. And the more attentive we are, the more His love can become known. And His love has been forgotten in our world. People do so much effort, you know. It often saddens me. I see people work so hard on themselves, work so hard in their life, without knowing the effortlessness of His love for us. This has to do with the Sufi mystery of witnessing, with the primordial covenant when the not yet created humanity stood before God. And God said, "Am I not your Lord?" And they said, "Yes, we witness it. We witness that He is one. We make it conscious, we make it known, not by talking about it, but by living it." And then the heart speaks, and the heart sings. And when the song of the heart comes alive, not just for one person, but for a whole group of people, then magic happens. It is beautiful to see a whole audience, their hearts beginning to sing. Then the angels come, and then the angels carry the message out where it needs to go. We have worked so long in darkness, now it is time to live in the light of our love for Him. And to celebrate the oneness that belongs to our tradition of lovers. The oneness that sings in the heart, the oneness that we want to live. And it is such a privilege to be together with so many seekers who come from all different places, all different walks of life, to be together to remember their beloved. And to give a space for His mystery to take place. This is the blank sheet of paper that Rumi says we should be. Be a blank sheet of paper with nothing on it. And to do that collectively, then He can write His name and His desire, His will on the whole collective that is here. Not just individually on our hearts, but collectively. Then it has much more power. Then it can sing much louder. It is time to come together for His sake, to bring our different wisdom, our different participation. Now I want to explain something very important. This meeting cannot happen, cannot take place without your full participation. This is not a gathering where people stand and or sit and give lectures and give to the audience. That is how it appears. That is the format. One has to have an appearance. But you should know, never judge a Sufi by appearance. Sufis are known as the masters of deception. You have all been deceived in coming here. Me too. I've just got used to it. We are His fools, His own personal idiots. We were lost in love long ago. We came into this world. We tried to be sensible people. For some of us, it is easier than others. But he needs to make something known to himself. That is the esoteric mystery. What it means to the mind, you don't have to understand. Most of Sufism, you don't have to understand with the mind. The heart knows. Something is given from heart to heart. It resonates from heart to heart. This is again has to do with the esoteric dimension of a Sufi gathering. It works from heart to heart, from soul to soul. But it needs all of your full participation, all of your attentiveness for this music to happen, for this dance to begin. And Sufis, what does it mean to participate? It means to be inwardly aligned with that which is highest in you, to be attentive, to listen, not just with the ears, because what I am going to say, what Andrew is going to say, what the other presenters are going to say, you have all heard 1,000 times before. You can read the books, it's cheaper. But from heart to heart, something else takes place. There is a meeting. There is a meeting of souls. This is infinitely precious. And this leaves a mark behind. There is a connection is made. This is real. Because where we meet is now in a space that has been made real through the grace of our tradition. I don't know how to explain that, but most things in life are not real. They are a reflection of a reflection. But when Sufis gather together and something is aligned, then the space can be made real. So although there is physical presence, there is also something else, which is presence on the level of the soul, where it is real. It has been given now. It will remain for the rest of this gathering. And that will allow something to take place. And the more attentive you are, the more you forget yourself, because that it is what it is to be attentive for a Sufi. We don't matter. We are incidental to the whole process. One of my favorite Sufi epitaphs is, "He is lost in the company of those who are lost in God." The more we forget, the more we are lost, the better. We are lost in our remembrance of God. We are obliterated. We have entered the tavern of ruin, in which there is only annihilation and drunkenness. And then magic can take place, and our world has been starved of magic. We work too hard to purify ourselves. Currents of love that flow from heart to heart do the work so much better, so much quicker, so much more effortlessly. And so please also have fun. Do not take this meeting seriously. Then you will try and make something out of it. You will try and make a spiritual construct out of it. It doesn't matter if you go home and you remember nothing except you had a good time. Somebody said at the last gathering, somebody who wasn't part of the conference, they were doing the taping, and their comment at the end was, "Were they all high on something? What had they taken? What had I missed?" We are here to celebrate his love for us, to indulge ourselves in it, not to have a little bit, to say, "I want more, I want to get drunk," and to be attentive to your drinking. Then something comes alive. There is one of my favorite great Sufis, Abu Sa'id ibn Abu Kahir. And he wrote a little poem. "What was more pleasing in the world than when the lover went with lover, the friend with friend? The rest was only grief, while that was all joy. The rest was only talk, while that was all deed." Just to be together for the sake of the one we love, as Sufis have done for centuries. But we've had to do it quietly for centuries, for fear of persecution. And that time is past. And don't worry if you don't understand anything. It doesn't matter. You don't have to take notes. You just have to be whom you are, what you want and live it. And indulge yourselves. There will be a lot of grace given this weekend. And the more you want, the more you get. That is the way it works. It is magnetic attraction. Heart to heart, soul to soul. Like Rumi says, don't look for water, be thirsty. You say, I've already given you contradiction. I say, you have to want something, and yet you are not here for yourself. You can't work that out. It doesn't matter. You're not here to work anything out. You're here to be drunk with love and to be attentive to love. And there is a special way to be attentive when you are really drunk, and I can't explain it to you. So please remember, you are the real participants. The speakers are just here for show. Not quite, but...
And what a show.
And what a show, that's Andrew. But it is your gathering. It is for you to make it happen. To make it happen with your longing for God. With your enjoyment of being together, with your celebration of His love, and with this quality of attention that one can call remembrance, that one can call witnessing, in which you are present, totally present. One can actually be present on all levels at the same time, not just present on the physical plane, you can be present all levels at the same time. And the more you are here, the more you can be given. It's as simple as that. The more you are awake, the more you can see. And if you want it too much, you won't get it. It is so simple. It is such a mystery. It is such a joke. And it has been lived by Sufis since the beginning of time. Since before they were called Sufis, they were called lovers of God. They have carried this thread for humanity, this thread of pure love that needs to be woven into the fabric of the earth in order for the earth to prosper, in order for the earth to flower, in order for colors to come alive. If this thread is not woven, then life becomes gray. It's true. We have done it secretly, hiddenly, in small groups all over the world in different places for centuries. Now there is a need for it to be known publicly, that this magic needs to come alive in a different way. This song needs to be heard, not just by those whose inner ears are attuned to love, but by the broader humanity. But we are here to live His love for us. That is all. That is the one note that contains within it all the other notes. He loves them and they love Him. This is the whole mystery of creation in this one surah. He loves them and they love Him. This is the mystery of the divine coming from the unknown, from the unmanifest, from the beyond of the beyond, down into creation, into the flowers, into the floor, into everything that is made, into our own hearts. That's He loves them. And they love Him is our offering it back to God, our witnessing His oneness, our remembrance of Him, and our joy to be of service to Him. There is such a joy that is awoken within the heart when we are of service to the one we love. I think there is no deeper joy one can have than to be of service to love, than to be of service to the beloved. and to help a little bit, just a little bit, to bring his song of love into the world. To help the world remember it belongs to God. To help this core of love that is at the very center of creation spin with the new energy it needs to purify the world. To help the heart of the world come alive. To help the song of the world be sung again. If it is his will. Because we always surrender to him, to our beloved, if it is his will. We are here for his sake. So enjoy yourselves, indulge yourselves. Do all the things you can't do at home. Dance and sing and meditate and pray and eat and talk and be together with friends. And remember your beloved. Remember why you really came into this world. Remember to whom you belong, to whom you always belong. Because there is nothing other than God. Everything is our beloved. And we are here together for his sake. And it is totally effortless, like the stream flowing outside. We are part of the flow of love. We are part of the song of love. It is already singing. So Andrew will now indulge ourselves, because he has that ability.
The prophet, God's blessing and peace be upon him, instructed us, pause and graze in the meadows of paradise when you pass them. Someone rather sensibly asked, what are the meadows of paradise? And the prophet answered, the gatherings formed to make remembrance of God. And here we all are in Black Mountain, a gathering of the lovers of God, and may we make of this weekend a meadow of paradise where each one of us can pause and graze and be fed. In the second surah of the Quran, it's written, and this is God speaking, make remembrance of me, and I will make remembrance of you. A tradition relates that the angel Gabriel told the prophet that God had said to Gabriel, I have given your community, the community of the prophet, something I have given to no other community. The prophet asked Gabriel, what is it? And Gabriel replied, it is the words, make remembrance of me, and I will make remembrance of you. So in opening our hearts, in making ourselves vibrant, in becoming drunk with divine love, and in allowing the sacred passion of the source to possess us and use us, we are experiencing this thrilling and naked intimacy with the divine that has promised us that if we remember the divine will at that moment be remembering us. Abu Sulaiman ad-Darani stated, "There are plains in paradise where the angels plant trees when we begin to make remembrance of God. Sometimes one of the angels stops his work and the others ask him, 'Why have you stopped?' He says, 'My companion has slacked off.' What I hope is that those angels up there will be planting so many trees and that we'll be granted by them at the end of this weekend a vision of all of those extraordinary jewel trees that they have planted, because together we have done the business and the pleasure and the joy and the ecstasy of remembering." And if there's anybody who helps us to remember who we are and who the divine is and what the splendor and majesty and intensity of the relationship between us and the divine can be, it is Jalaluddin Rumi. And Rumi is returning in a great green wave of bliss and power to irrigate the minds and hearts and bodies and souls of the whole world at this moment, so that the whole world, anybody who wants to, can drink of the wild wine that sent him reeling his whole lifetime. Rumi combined three things. He combined the philosophical intellect of a Plato, the soul force and soul passion of a Buddha or a Christ, and the fabulous and extravagant gifts of a Shakespeare. And no one in the whole history of humanity has ever been able to match that fusion of the highest realization with the most spectacular and splendid abilities to communicate the very essence and nuance of that realization. And if Shakespeare has given us in his plays a whole gallery of characters in which we can see the whole dance of humanity, then what Rumi has given in his poems to us is the full cosmic drama of the relationship of the soul and the beloved, in all its magnificence, in all its pain, in all its rapture, in all its seedy, weird ambiguity, in all its dance of polarities and contradictions, and in all its unending opening onto new vista after new vista. And this gift goes beyond any religion's power to contain it, and any path's power to express it, because what Rumi became in his lifetime was nothing less than the voice of the beloved using a human being and a human mouth to give the complete experience away so that anybody who wanted to could dance in its flames and be purified and made drunk by it. And before I read from my book, Light Upon Light, which is a mystical symphony dedicated to Rumi and is a selection from his works arranged as an uncovering of the whole path, I would like to read you something that I read for the 500th time last night, but heard for the first time. You know what is so astonishing about Rumi's work? It is that it partakes of the same outrageous freshness of the divine creation itself. The Sufi metaphysicians say that at every single moment, the creation is created afresh. It's fresh minted from the source. His poetry, however many times you read it, every time that you approach it with an open heart, will give you another shock of wisdom, another electric brand of recognition. One day, Rumi's wife, this is from the table talk, asked him about the mysterious meaning hidden in the sacred saying, "Most of the inhabitants of paradise are imbeciles." One of my favorite sayings, I have to say. Rumi replied, "If they hadn't been imbeciles, how could they have been satisfied merely by paradise and its streams?" To explain further what he meant, Rumi recited these verses. "If in hell I could touch the curls of your hair, I'd be ashamed of the state of the elect in heaven. And if without you I was called to the fields of heaven, that vast space would be too narrow for my heart." Rumi then said, "Every low-souled person who confines himself to contemplating the garden remains deprived of the vision of the gardener." And then he said, "For me, paradise without him is hell and the enemy. I have been burnt by that terrible splendor that is the glory of the lights of eternity." And what the Sufis really are, behind all the definitions that you can produce from all the scholars, what they really are those who have been burnt by the terrible splendor that is the glory of the lights of eternity. They are those who have allowed themselves to fall into the pit of fire that is the living presence of the beloved and accepted the burning away in that fire to become one of its flames. And without that intensity and passion and beauty, extreme wild beauty, being brought to the path, no one can know what he means when he cries out, "If in hell I could touch the curls of your hair, I'd be ashamed of the state of the elect in heaven." Because the point of the path is to be burnt by the glory of extreme, abandoned, absolutely selfless love for the beloved. And if that love takes you to the bottom of hell, so be it, because only that love is real. And if you were in heaven without that love, for all its beautiful streams and dancing girls and dancing boys and fabulously good-looking people who never age, all willing to do whatever the bloody hell you want them to do, whatever you found that was meaningful, none of it would mean anything without that enormous shaking with joy that happens in the heart when the lover thinks of the beloved. And in one of his most beautiful poems, he says this lines. He says, "He came to me and offered me the empire of the world. And I said, all I want is to wake up at night burning with love for you, because I know that when I burn like that, I call you to me and you become me." Answering that call of the divine to us, the source to us, to become one with us, is the most important thing we do. Because if we learn how to answer that call, we start up in us a process. We activate a hidden spiral process within us that will drag us willy-nilly into the garden of perfection. So let me read to you from the first part of my mystical symphony. It has five parts. It's called The Call. There doesn't exist a being your grace cannot transfigure, and the lover you choose lives in joy forever. What atom could your grace even for a moment come near without making it more magnificent than a thousand suns? All theologies are straws. Your sun burns to dust. Knowing will take you to the threshold, but not through the door. Nothing can teach you if you don't unlearn everything. How learned I was before revelation made me dumb. O life of the soul, since you have a house in every atom of this world, why doesn't the dust of the road sing? Why are stones shut down? Why does poison taste terrible? Why do thorns pierce? Why does anger flame into violence? Why are nights black? One night in the garden of your face, I couldn't keep from being amazed at how, during your reign, a thorn could still be a thorn. Has he, I thought, out of self-jealousy, masked his own face? Does he sustain this otherness so others cannot glimpse him at all? Or is it that the world's eye is so cancered over, so darkened, it can see nothing, nothing at all, of the tenderness of that radiant face? You haven't dared yet lose faith. So how can faith grow in you? You haven't dared yet risk your heart. So what can you see of me? You're obsessed still with the carnal screams of your life. How do you hope to step into the mystery of the King? You are a sea of gnosis, hidden in a drop of dew. You are a whole universe, hidden in a sack of blood. What are all these world's pleasures and joys that you keep grasping at them to make you alive? Does the sun borrow light from a mote of dust? Does Venus look for wine from a cracked jug? There is no angel so sublime, he whispered, who can be granted for one moment what is granted you forever. And I hung my head, astounded. Leap free of the cage. How could the soul not take flight when from the glorious presence a soft call flows, sweet as honey, and whispers, rise up now, come away? How could the fish not jump immediately from dry land into water, when the sound of water from the ocean of fresh waves springs to his ear? How could the hawk not fly away, back to the wrist of the King? As soon as he hears that drum, the King's baton hits again and again, drumming up the signal of return. And how could the Sufi not start to dance, turning on herself like the atom in the sun of eternity, so she can leap free of this dying world? Fly away, bird, to your native home. You have leaped free of the cage. Your wings are flung back in the wind of God. Leave behind the stagnant and marshy waters. Hurry, 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 O bird, to the source of life. And when you hear that call, and when you really hear its pristine beauty calling to you, and when everything in you starts to leap towards it, then you really begin the path. And then you really, really open up to the outrageous possibilities that all the mystics of all the paths, but especially the Sufis, with their knowledge of the infinite mercy and power of the Beloved, have always stressed: the infinite possibility of what we can become when we let love seize us and change us. Look, God has created all causes in such a way that to a drop of sperm that did not possess either hearing or intelligence or spirit or sight or grief or superiority or inferiority, he has given a shelter in the womb. This is Rumi's Table Talk. And in the womb, he transformed water into blood and coagulated and modeled that blood into skin. And there, where there were no hands or limbs of any kind before, he created the windows of the mouth, eyes, and ears, fashioned the tongue and throat, and the chest's cave, in which he placed a heart that is all at once a drop and a world, a pearl and a sea, a slave and a king. What intelligence exists that could understand how he could lead us from such a dark and hollow and miserable place and state of ignorance to where we are now? God has said, hasn't he? Have you seen from where I have taken you and will take you? I tell you that I will not leave you even where you are now. I will lead you beyond what you imagine this heaven to be, beyond what you imagine this earth to be, into another heaven and into another earth that you cannot even now begin to imagine, whose nature is to expand and keep on expanding and expanding and expanding forever, the soul in joy.